I would like to call the order of the Library Board of Directors meeting for the Salt Lake County Library. We will start off with a welcome from Joey.
Welcome.
Thank you for being here today. Thank you to those who are joining online. We appreciate you finding a way to make these meetings work, even when it's a tight scheduling challenge. So we're glad to have certainly our in-person board members, but appreciate the online presence as well, especially because it gives us a forum, which is especially helpful when we have action items. And because we want you to know what's going on. So thank you. And certainly thanks to our current team for hosting us in this gorgeous branch. Every time I come, I'm amazed just by how beautiful it is here. And thank you to Melissa and Lenora and our IT team for setting up the meeting for us. These meetings go well and smoothly because our library team does a lot of work ahead of time to make sure that happens. So we're glad to have you here today.
Thank you.
Okay, so the first action item is to approve the minutes from the February 23rd, 2026 board meeting. Can I get a motion?
I make a motion to approve the minutes.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, hearing none.
Aye.
We will have the next item. Thanks to everyone online. Do we have any public comments or correspondence? I don't see any public comment in the room. Anybody online, a member of the public, would like to make a comment? Okay, hearing none. I do want to make a note about the public comments on the website, Melissa, just to talk about it quickly. On the Contact Us link on the homepage of the library, it's linking to our message, drop a comment to the port for, like, the entire library system. So every time you hit Contact Us, it links to our message board page, which is why I think there's been an influx.
Yes.
Do you want to talk about that? Sorry. Well, I think it's two issues. So first, we don't know for certain, but I suspect that our contact interface may not have been functioning for a while, given how this we have received. Like, the influx of messages that we were seeing is... It was like zero to quite a bit of activity, which is great. We love hearing from our patrons. But I think, Melissa, what Anastasia's saying is that it's only saying contact the library board, not giving other options in the library to contact.
You look on your website.
So,
so you're wanting to, because we do have two different ways to do that, I think. And there's a different, like, a lot of people, and then we do have the contact board.
I looked this morning, when you go to the home page of the Salt Lake County Library and you hit contact us, it shows the board's page.
Oh, it doesn't
redirect you to, like, the library's page form for people. So I'm wondering if something like that misdirected on the web page side of it. And we've been doing quite a few updates on our webpage, in part because we're often doing updates, and because we're working on ADA compliance.
Right.
So we will follow up on that. So we'll follow up and make sure that the contact form is gives options. Because if people want to contact the library board, we definitely want them to be able to. If they're actually trying to contact a branch manager and the entire library board seeing it, maybe that's not the best.
It's like the only fillable box on the contact
next page of ours. So, okay.
Anne, are you receiving those emails now before I reply to them?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I am receiving them.
Okay. So Jessica and Lindsay online, let me know. You should be receiving them too, but let us know if you are not.
Jessica says yes.
Oh, perfect.
Okay. Do you mind clicking the chat so that we can see the chat bar in the meeting?
Lindsay's also seeing them, so I think you've got them all.
I think I need to do it up here.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yes,
no, that's fine.
That'll help us so that we can track the conversation. So we don't have to just catch the 4 seconds that the chat is like a bubble.
There we go.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. All right, perfect. Well, if Anne and Jessica and Lindsay are getting all of them, that's great. So then I think it's just fixing that contact us page. Okay, any other correspondence that you'd like to share besides Anne?
You've seen it all.
So I think we're okay today.
Okay.
Great. Well,
go ahead. I will mention that there was one that came in earlier today that it was
There's no return address on this, so we can't respond directly to the individual. I've looked over the questions that they mentioned, and it talked a lot about information on diversity hiring and things like that, and it being a very white female organization. I will say, like, I've seen the images that come across on all these, and I think that the evidence that I've seen is not that is not accurate.
It's on its face,
but you know, I know that I talked to Melissa this morning just to see, like, what are we going to do about this, and it's been put to HR and just to, that they can look at it. But at the same time, you know, I have to say, like, I haven't seen the evidence of this coming up, and I've actually seen our organization being one that is, you know, very representative for my input. So
yeah, I saw that one too. And I think it's important, and I'm grateful that the community member, like, it has been an influx of communications, but all of them have been interesting to see, right? Like, how amazing people are, how plugged in they are. I think you all at the library have a hard time breathing without somebody feeling it across the county in some way, right? So we'll wait to hear back from Pamela. But I think for the rest of them, Melissa, I'm just so grateful for you and for the rest of the staff and how you've been, like, operating and responding to those with care and looking into each concern, even with everything else that you have going on. That's been really cool to see the intention.
I try to make that a priority. So you guys, let me know if there's anything I'm not doing right.
Thank you so much. Okay, well, let's go on then and introduce Josh Walters and have an intro of the conference. Hi, thank you for having us.
Thank you for coming in. Welcome, or welcome back. It's been a couple of years since we were here the last time around. So try and keep it quick. New building, relatively new building, 6 years old this year now, which is great. Melissa has some of these, so we're going to breeze past a couple of the slides that are a little more statistics heavy, because you can get back to those and just sort of talk about the space in the building. We do have, as you saw on the, the chart, a diverse and wonderful staff here that does a really fantastic job of getting all of the rooms together, getting all the books out to patrons, helping out. We have an incredibly high volume of folks through the door using everything we've got to offer, so much so that we were setting up in there and we were in the wrong space because somebody else had it. We're always doing interesting things. You can go on to the next one, please. So this is just sort of our service area, being Bangor's 47, 62, 66, and then all the way out over to Bacchus. And then on the next slide, about 80% of the folks who do come to visit us come from within about 3.5 miles or something along those lines. So relatively close neighborhoods that come. We've got a little bit of an influx with the Taylorsville folks. The staff library being closed, we also got some of their staff, which has been fantastic too. Thank you to Christina for making those available. Great, great staff. It's been nice to have them helping out because we've been much busier under that closure. Next slide. Which will next slide is, oh, there we go. This is actually good. So the previous one we don't need to see. That one has some of the more actual statistical demographics. 165,000 visits last year, number of new patron registrations, which is great. We see, what do we see on a day-to-day basis? A lot of teens, unsurprisingly. We have the junior high right over there. So they kind of tend to descend right about 2:45 when school gets out. and then they'll stick around during Kids Cafe, and sometimes they'll come and go. It depends on the weather. So they can be a challenge, but a good one. We have a lot of families with the young children. With young children, our storytime librarian does 3 a week, so she's really, really proactive and really, really busy getting them in here to experience that. She does baby story times, bilingual, not a regular one for slightly older children. We actually have our teen librarian just started up a teen story time, which she's really enthusiastic about. Lower income folks, we have a lot of tech barrier and a lot of language barrier here. Which is that's kind of probably our biggest challenge is for who we're helping to serve. So next slide, please.
Sorry, I did two twice.
You did it, usually I just go off the slide. So the
meeting rooms, big use case. We have this large medium-sized meeting room. We have the giant one over there with the creative kitchen, much bigger. We've got the stage and the huge screen and everything. We can do everything for us. We've had piano recitals and all kinds of fun things in there. Church groups come in. We have there's a steampunk dance group that comes in once a month and uses our place and wants to use this. Great. All kinds of interesting things. We have some very active homeschoolers that come in and do their steam crafts and things like that. I don't know if you've ever tried to book a reservation in the system for our large rooms. You can book 90 days out. That's the way the system has it set up. And ours start to go 90 days out. and we have some who are waiting to book. Like they know they have, you know, the steampunk folks have their standing meeting on Monday and they are booking, you know, as soon as it becomes available. So it actually makes it a challenge for us as well. Because we have to be really on our game about what we're doing, or our rooms are already all taken and we can't do it.
Can I interrupt momentarily to just let our board members online know we're trying to pull up the
PowerPoint. Okay.
It's taking a long time to load. I don't know if PowerPoint's going to be faster than PDF, but we shall try. But for our board members online, you have this was included as an email attachment if you want to follow along. It's also available to members of the public.
This was not given, but I will put it out after the meeting.
Okay.
So this and the next slide will show. But we were having tech problems getting those to open.
Having tech problems. Okay. Well, there's some great slides, which is unfortunate because there's some great pictures in there that was what we really wanted to share with. But along with the rooms, computer usage, we have very high computer usage. Again, we're bridging a tech gap for a lot of folks who need to come in and be able to use computers, blueprints, do job applications, all those sorts of things. So that's a really huge use, and as well as a lot of the kids will come after school to use it to play and gives them fun times as well. We printed, almost 150,000 pages we printed here last year. I think it was about 8% of the system's total. So lots and lots and lots of printing here. Hunter is another one that does a lot of the same as well. So those are the services that folks really need. We have the Create Space, which is fantastic and fun. It was an absolute zoo last Christmas. We're expecting it will be an absolute zoo this Christmas as well. Everybody just discovered sublimation printing this year. Apparently it trended on TikTok or something. And so our sublimation printer and our GoForge were booked basically nonstop for. We had, 804 reservations in December alone in the group. So they cranked through there, and it is fantastic. It's a lot of fun. It's really neat to see the projects that people come up with and the things they do. The thing that we're really proud of as well is just all of the programming that we do. If you want to just leave you with our calendar, too, so you can see what we do every month. We did, about 750 individual programs of repeating programs last year. We had about 30 or 40 one-offs. 7,368 total people showed up for the programs. Everything from English literacy to computer languages in Spanish, or sorry, computer literacy in Spanish. We have all those story times, teen times in the afternoon, citizenship. We do a Dia de los Muertos every year. If you could go one forward, just for now, if it's loading. Yes, our Spanish librarian was particularly proud. We had, this was her graduating class for her English language. They basically made it from out of the first set of the elementary school English. He had graduated into the next one. A couple of folks who got their citizenship, passed their tests, naturalized, all of that. Teen time, next page. We do DIA every year. 635 people showed up for that one. It's a madhouse. It's incredible. I'm astounded. They put up an Ephrenda right here that you will see on the next page, and this is just stunning. We had a full naturalization ceremony through the city, state came here. So we hosted that. I think there are about 70 odd people doing that. So just some really awesome uses and things we get to do for the community here, which is really neat. Next page, please. Yeah, so there's the referendum that they do. And if you actually, one more page, sorry. There we go. So we have a number of community partners that we work with. They're folks who come here to do things for people. It gives them the ability to reach out to, you know, the patrons somewhere other than their offices. Everything from Red Cross, South Valley Services, doing homeless services and things like that. Some of them are more community-focused groups. The one that constantly astounds me, we have one, the Sementes Activas group. Raquel Ruiz, our Spanish language librarian, and has been working with them forever. Her relationship is incredible. They're here every Wednesday. It's a Alzheimer's support and active minds is what it means. And they do the ofrenda for us every year, and they start now. And it's different every year. It's amazing. If you haven't seen it, highly recommend coming check it out in October. It's just astounding the work that they do. They're helping us out with summer decoration for summer reading, things like that. So great community partners. Really, really, the staff is great about building these relationships. It's just very impressive. And the next page, I don't know. So, sorry, I think I went a little over. That's the end of the zombie makeup night. Our librarians decided we had to do an Alice in Wonderland, or sorry, Lewis Carroll Alice in Wonderland Day. So they're dressed up. But yeah, thank you for your time. We'll have a meeting. If you would like a tour afterwards, I'd be happy to show you around the library.
Thank you so much. Can I ask one quick question? So I saw that you have Spanish up there too, but what's the other language?
The other one was Vietnamese. I didn't know if we had enough to handle it or not. Yeah, so we do, we have an English, our calendar, we do English, Spanish, and then because we have the Vietnamese church there, actually a fairly high percentage, one of our staff members translates that one into Vietnamese as well, so we have several options for folks to get to know what we've got going on.
Thank you. If I could add, in addition to the great programming that we see here and just managing this space, this is a large branch for us at nearly 35,000 square feet. This is also a branch that has just different folks who are, say, 35,000. This is also a branch where we'll have different people coming in with needing like more acute intervention and or just sometimes wild things that happen. And this team handles it so professionally. And so when you're a library, you're managing on all of the sort of planes at once, right? Helping people who are needing direct support or intervention, helping people who are here for entertainment, planning ahead for great programs and building those relationships with the community partners. And I think Kearns and some of our other branches, but Kearns as well, really stretches that continuum of need. And so I think that being able to pivot back and forth between a patron who's needing some unequivocal redirecting and then moving into a story time, a Spanish story time, takes some flexibility, and this team does a great job with that. So thank you for the work you're doing to support this community that really, I think, as much as any of our branches, really, this is a community center.
We sometimes joke that it's a community center that's wrapped around the library. If you can feel that way, because we're doing, there's a lot more to it. Just the books.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
No, I just threw that in my whole room. I got distracted. I can introduce the topic. Yeah, that's okay. Okay, stepping in.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to move to the next action item on the agenda. County Councilmember Johnson isn't with us today, but Joey is going to introduce the topic and then kind of give us an overview of it.
Perfect. Thank you. Yes. Councilmember Johnson approached the library recently to talk about the possibility of eliminating fines on all of our materials. In addition, you know, obviously, to maintaining the fine-free policy that we have on children's materials. As we get into the discussion, just one little caveat is our recommendation would be that it not apply to the Library of Things. Those are some pretty big ticket items that we need to get back. We already have a different fine structure for those, and we need to get them back on time because if you have a telescope checked out and somebody else has reserved it for a trip they're going on, we need to encourage people to have higher stakes for getting those items back. So, caveat noted. Unfortunately, Councilmember Johnson had to go to court today, and I guess like the rest of us, we show up. And he's an attorney, so
We should clarify. In his professional role.
Because he's an attorney, he has to go to court. Most of us, I think, go when someone, no matter our role. But in this case, it is in his professional capacity, so thank you. And so what he wanted was for us to still have a chance to talk about this a little bit today. And so I will. The idea, a lot of libraries, particularly larger library systems, have moved toward fine-free on all materials. There are a lot of reasons for this, one of them being that fines don't have the impact on behavior that we seem to think it would. Intuitively, it seems like if you have a fine, you're going to get your book back. But a lot of people, particularly on the higher end of the income brackets, just feel like they can absorb that. You know, it's a few dollars. We cap at $5. Is that right? So it's not going to be more than $5 for an item anyway. So if you have the flexibility, you can decide that you're going to receive a small fine instead of running that errand today. However, for people who don't have that flexibility, that economic flexibility, what we see is that it creates barriers to access. You know, they're afraid to come back. So we would still charge a fee if materials are lost. So we would still be expecting these materials to come back. It's just sort of like it adjusts that time frame for when there would be any kind of cost assessed and assigned to the patron. We are preparing some research on what the impact of this would be, but we're still implementing the changes in our record keeping from implementing the write-off policy. And so we'll have more data in April about what some of the effects of that would be, and you know what it might mean on our revenue or what it might mean for our patrons and hold times. And so this is sort of a preliminary question to the board, I would say, about do you want us to, you know, this is coming from the council member. The way it worked with the fine-free policy for children's materials is council members presented the idea to the board. The board recommended that the library move forward with research. And then when we had a little bit more data, we came back for a fuller discussion about whether or not the board would recommend implementation, and then we would have to take it to council for approval as well.
And I think that was my initial thought, was I would like to move it forward for research and recommendation, because it's hard for me to have a cursory conversation when I don't, without the data, right? Like, whenever we did the summer, the kids program, we went for it for a summer. It was more than just, okay, what does it look like? What's the impact look like? It was, okay, we'll do this for 12 weeks, see what the impact was, and then we'll come back and look at that too. And so I think that's maybe where I'm at. Yeah,
I guess I have a few thoughts, if that's okay.
No.
I agree with Anastasia, but I'd love to see kind of some more data. And if possible, and if not too much of a burden, I would like to see the data from, you reference other library systems that have implemented similar. I would love to see some kind of hard data, to extent we have it, on the correlation or lack thereof between fines and returning goods or materials. And then, I would also be curious, you mentioned, of course, that a fee would be assessed at some point if the material is not returned. And remind me what our policy is on the children's materials, because I think that applies to the children's materials, even with the fine-free direction we've gone there, right? And then I guess the question is, would it be a similar timeline with respect to all materials?
What does it look like? So if an item's lost, does it stay late forever and ever, or does the patron have to tell you that it's been lost? Or is there a time
limit? Or is there a time limit at which it's shown through it's been lost?
Yeah. It's a time limit. We're talking about changing that time limit. So here's how we can do this. I can take a stab at it based on my notes and what I remember, or Krista, who is leading this project, can walk us through that. Do you want, like, I have the notes up here. Maybe you don't remember every step of every detail, but it's actually been a little minute since we talked about it.
I can give a brief overview, and you can correct me if I'm wrong.
Oh, I was going to offer the opposite. So we'll be able to team it. Go ahead, Krista.
We do send out several notices, and it's pretty much, you know, the item, it moves up and down depending on, like, the buy example, right? It won't renew. You get three automatic renewals, which for 3 weeks. So basically, patron could have the item now, or it's the first checkout and then three renewals. So technically, it's 12 weeks. And then after, if it's not returned, then they get notifications along the way as well.
Well, I know, I've got voicemails from that bank.
And then we end it. It's currently, after that last notification, it's like 45 days of set to loss.
Okay.
And then there's another step where we actually delete it out of the system, so they have no option to return it. It's like, it's in charge of their... And that's the final solution is the one that we're working on, because if we do move that up a little bit, it will help get our items back a little bit faster. What we've noticed with the children's materials is that they tend to keep some of the items if they're not on hold until the full maximum time that, like, they're actually in charge. So we'll share that data with you all the next time that we meet and show you kind of this, what's happened with juvenile materials as well, what we're hoping to kind of fix. We're also going to get a new notification system this year, which we think will be super helpful to really communicate with our people and improve that return process as well. So we'll share, we can share lots of data. It's fine.
Yeah.
I was surprised that this was happening. So, but we're ready.
I have a particular question. I have a lot of people who very interested in the most popular book, and so they get in the line, and they're like number 149. What effect would not having fines have on return of books where there are so many people who are waiting?
That's probably the number one downside of this, Holly. It could increase our wait times, as well as our turnover rate of circulation could decrease. But
although that doesn't affect digital items as much, right? So you said people aren't getting the similar materials through the digital means, because then it just does an automatic return, right?
Right. So if your physical materials only that would be impacted.
In relation to that, like, I think one of the data points that would be very helpful for us is to identify the ones that don't get returned as expected. Like, how many of those are high popularity, people waiting for them type of items, because I think that's going to be a big decision.
We can work on that. It's a little tricky because we anonymize the data. So we, now that we know this, is, we can start tracking that better, because right now that a lot of that's anonymized after 7 months. So great idea. We're on it. We might just take a minute to get that data for you.
So,
if he
wants to talk, I was reading the comments. Sorry.
Sure. I was just going to share. Well, first off, I share Ann's same concern. As silly as it seems, the number one thing I hear from friends and neighbors is, when the new Dan Brown book comes out, they want to be on that one. Or, like, right now, everybody wants to read Project Hail Mary this week. And, there's challenges with that. I guess my comment is just, I recall that we actually did discuss this even before the children's fines went away, that many libraries were doing this and that we considered it and thought that we shouldn't. I'm all for changing our mind, but I guess I don't recall any of those details. I think it was when I was brand new. But if we know that information, I think that would be good to know.
we will do some research. We've got an internal project in the works, and certainly we would love to have this conversation fully when Council Member Johnson can join us as well. So the purpose of moving through this today is really to introduce you to the idea, see if we want to keep moving forward. You could decide if you really thumbs down this, and then we'll stop. But if you want us to continue to pursue it, we can do that. Was that a comment? Well, I was going to say I can give a little bit more detail on some of the process. And we could put that together in like a presentation for you next week in a format, by week, every month, in a format that would be easier for you to remember. So actually, I'm going to stop myself. The other, you can go ahead before I speak.
Oh, okay. I guess the only thing I was going to say is, I'm open-minded about this, and I'm in agreement that with you that even if we went this direction about keeping the library of things separate, but I guess I in terms of kind of pitching this to the board and call kind of the larger stakeholders, it does seem like it's kind of we're saying, well, we don't think there's a correlation between fines and returning materials. But the Library of Things is different, and there we want to make sure that people return things, so we're going to maintain fines, right? And so it's kind of like, is there not a correlation, or is it more we're just kind of like balancing the equity, so to speak, right. And if somebody has to, if we need to buy a new book, that's a lot less expensive than buying a telescope. Like,
good, that's a fair question, and actually something I wanted to speak to as well, because one of the things that I didn't say at the beginning of this is that a $1 late fine, it's really hard for me to remember whether it's fines or fees, so that's why you hear me pause all the time. Late fine, a $1 late fine doesn't change people's behaviors, but a $22 replacement fee does galvanize people to bring in the material. So I think when I say fines don't change behavior, I should qualify that to small fines don't change behavior, and we intentionally keep those fines low to maintain access. Larger fines do change behavior, and our Library of Things fines are higher for that reason. So it is. We are sort of talking out of both sides of our mouths a little bit, and I think that threshold is a key piece of that. While not suggesting that we make all fines a bazillion dollars.
I think the other question that I have thinking through all of these is just the totality of it. Right, we just went through the long-range plan at our last board meeting and looked through what the tax increases look like over the next 10 years and what burden that puts on the county, if a burden, and how to make that lesser. And now realizing that, like, yes, you could take these away, but it is going to relate to a chunk of revenue that the library brings in every year that's self-sustaining, not on tax dollars. And so is that replaced by something else? Do you bring that revenue in somewhere else? Or are we shifting that burden onto the taxpayers is a question I have. And then just resource allocation for all of you. I feel like once a year a council member comes to you with a grand idea about closing Sundays or opening Sundays, and then you spend a lot of money to work with an outside firm to do a lot of research to decide whether or not opening on Sundays is something that would be a value add for it to not go anywhere. And that's a lot of resource management internally and a lot of resource management externally. And so it feels like every year there's a grand idea that comes through, whether that's Sundays or child's materials making more availability of our online materials. And so I think that's my other question is, how does this fit into that larger picture of all of the requests that come through? What's actually a priority for all of you? What do you hear from community members as a need? And that's helpful as we make informed decisions, not just on the data side of it, but like, is it a better focus for us to talk about Sundays again rather than to talk about ending fees? Like, what does that look like? So that's the other question that I have percolating. You all get asked to do a lot of things, and you're not alchemists. So just thinking about that resource allocation is the question that I have in my mind.
Hi. After Natalie.
Hi, yes. I spoke to Councilmember Johnson a little bit about this fine fee. And to be completely honest, I was so surprised about it because I didn't even know this was a possibility. I know there's a lot of conversation about data, and I am totally in agreement with that. I would say from a council standpoint, we spend a lot of our time talking to people, right? I've spent a lot of time speaking to folks around the valley, and I would say that this is actually something that I think most residents want. I think the word equity was brought up, and I think that is the correct word to use when thinking about this situation. I don't think it's a waste of time to research how this will be impactful. I think we need to think about the folks who do come to iLibrary, and there is an equity split of how that is viewed. And right now, as we've seen in the past couple of years, libraries are being under scrutiny, and I think this is a great opportunity for us to realign ourselves with the community and be a community resource as the existence of libraries continue to be under scrutiny. So I think it's an advantage to do it, and I've had many of residents who are very helpful, excited, about the possibility of going this route. I do think we're talking about different things when it comes to fine free. I think when he says, the Library of Things, it sounds like, when it comes to our high-tech things. I think when most folks are thinking of the library, they're thinking of books, and I think that's a logical step of what most of us are thinking about when it comes to fines. And we know that what our third grader population has a literacy problem. So again, if we continue to think about how we're going to operate as a library for the last 20 years when we know we have all these external factors, we're just not doing ourselves due diligence. So I think it's not a waste of time to explore this.
No, and I agree. I think I was trying to say, where's the best time spent, right? Is it on something like Sundays where people don't have access? Is it on something like debt revenue? Do we have the revenue to do it? Where would it come from? Like those sorts of things. So whenever you think about equity, I think it comes in a lot of diverse looks, right? It could mean that you're open on different days. It could mean that you extend your online materials. Like, we've been asked to do a lot of things over the last few years, but I think all have that same outlook and question in mind. I just want to make sure that we get too many long-term projects happening at once. It strains the internal team to do all of the things, and you all do the things so well. So I think that's kind of the question that I'm thinking about.
And I wanted to be clear that I think, you know, this is my second year on the council. So, you know, anything that is before 2025, I have no memory of or experience with. If there was a study done on Sundays, I would love more information. That's my role on this board, is for you to follow up with information like that, because I agree. I think we should be open on Sundays, and that's something that I can bring to our council in the next 2 weeks. So if that is something that's a conversation that the board feels like has been a waste of time, let me know. I can send an email today and explore what happened with that Sunday. I don't know. I don't know anything about it. This is my first time hearing it. So please follow up with information.
Yeah, so I think it's just like that resource allocation and right? So let's go forward with an action item. Do we want to move to collect more data and let the library team do what they do best? Yeah. Okay, we got one move. Can I get a second? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any names?
Aye.
Okay, it looks like we're all unanimous. Thank you for those online. Thank you, Councilmember Pinky, for talking to us and for all your thoughts.
Can I have one comment?
Yeah.
Thank you so much for this great discussion. This is something that really is, these kinds of questions bring up a lot of competing values. So thank you for your concern for our staff. That's always, we're here to serve the public, but it's always appreciated, you know, when our leadership also remembers the toll for our staff. But I would also add, looking into these kinds of things, we try to do it practically. Mm-hmm. Because even if we don't move forward with a decision, understanding why and how that can impact us going forward is generally, at least mostly, effort well spent. So we're happy to pursue this idea, and if the board wants to move forward with it, we'll give you the information. Well, we'll give you the information you need and get to decide either way. But we're happy to pull that information together. You'll benefit us, I think, either way.
Okay. Well, thank you, everyone. I guess we'll wait back to hear. Chris was like, you just gave me 3 months of work.
Wow. Yeah. Also, just to go down to, like, one thing that will be excluded, and need to be excluded, is our interlibrary loans.
Yeah.
So that, because we don't have any control over it, right, since we're borrowing from other systems. So,
okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
The next item on the agenda is the digital library with Donna Lee and Nanette.
So do you want the super speedy version to conserve time, or is the full 15-minute version okay?
You get to drive the bus.
I can make up the time on it.
So what we're, Nanette and I are going to cover today is our digital library. We're going to present an overview of our different platforms, our circulation, and some additional information about the cost of items and some other little tidbits that are kind of interesting to see. The first thing we want to mention is that Krista, of course, as the Senior Manager of Collections, is over this and our direct supervisor. And as the person over this, she determines the parameters, which just guide our decisions. She also helps us figure out our budget, the purchasing of the digital collections, and any other guidelines that we have to keep in mind as we move forward. Next slide, please. Okay. So, 2025. In 2025, the digital collection circulated 3.732 million signs. The overall system circulation was 12.473 million. And that meant that 29.9% of our overall system circulation was our digital collection. This does not include our databases. The interesting thing to note on here is, and we could point out the audiobook collection and how that's a runaway train, but if you look at the eMagazine access, last year we had a product called Flipster, which we had from January through December. In October, we added Overdrive magazines through our Libby service, and we only had those from October through December. The circulation for Flipster for the entire year was 22,000 plus. The circulation for Overdrive for 3 months was 40,000. And that shows the value of having, number one, a very large collection of magazines, because there's approximately 6,000 through Overdrive, but also having it in our most popular service, it's much more findable for people. Next slide, please. Okay, another way to look at circulation is through this chart or visualization, and this tracks the circulation of digital and physical items from 2018 through 2025. Now, the lighter blue column is the total circulation for the year, or for the years, and the darker blue one is our physical circulation, and the little teal one that's heading upward is our digital circulation. Year over year, the digital circulation has gone from 15% in 2018 to just under 30% in 2025. It's also nice to see that the both the physical and the digital recovered really well from 2025 and has been fairly consistent, or from 2020, don't mind me, and has been fairly consistent in the last 3 to 4 years. Next slide, please. In terms of our budget, as of 2025, 53% of the budget, circulating collection budget, was assigned to physical collections, and 47% of the budget covers our circulating digital items. This will be addressed a little bit later because the most important fact about this is the cost of items. Can't begin to say how much I impact the choices. Next slide. Okay, the digital library. So we have a web page for the digital library, and on that page you can find all of our digital offerings. And the offerings include e-books, e-audiobooks, e-movies, e-music, magazines, newspapers, television, and TV. Television and TV. it includes, on the page, you not only find the link to the apps or the service directly, but you also will find guides, quick start help guides that have been created by our teammate Lindy Bueller and one of the teams she works with. And those, like I refer people to these all the time and when doing purchase requests and stuff, super helpful to get people started, help them get in the right direction. And all of our platforms include materials in other languages. And another one of our team members, Katie Wagner, orders and oversees the digital language collections for us. She also does the branch language collections. Next slide, please. Okay, so we're going to start with our platforms. The first ones we're going to cover is two, Tumble Books and Tumble Math. What's interesting about these are for preschool through grade 6. And they are animated talking picture books which teach kids the joy of reading or how to develop math skills through reading. Titles are created by taking existing picture books, adding animation, sound, music, and narration to produce an electronic picture book which can be read by or to a child. So it's basically your read listens or your CD with a book on steroids. The collection also includes graphic novels, read-along chapter books, nonfiction, videos, music, and games. It provides materials in multiple languages that does include Spanish, French, German, Arabic, Chinese. There may only be 20 books in that, but they're very good places to start with languages. Okay. The titles are curated by Tumble Books, so we don't do any of the curation. It is included in the service. And they feature award-winning and curriculum-based titles for preschool through elementary school age. Information for each title features multiple types of reading levels, accelerated reader. Some include games and full unit plans. If you look at the Make-A-Wish Albert down at the bottom of it, there is actually lesson plans that come with it. This means that both of these are extremely good to enhance existing school materials for homeschooling, for increasing parent, grandparent, any relative, friend, whatever, involvement. But it's also great to take traveling. These are web-based services. You don't have to download anything. You can simply just pull them up and use them. And there are thousands of books in both of these services. And the math goes all the way up through early algebra. So it covers quite a bit. So both of these, like I said, web-based. There is an app, but it's very limited. I think it's Apple and Google. And there are no checkouts or hold limits, and all materials are available at all times. Next slide, please.
So you just log in using your library credentials?
Yes. Yeah, it's super easy to use. Okay, ProQuest. ProQuest is a database and platform. And it's provided through the state library. It's a searchable database that provides full text access to newspapers, more than 300, from around the world, so that again, in multiple languages. There's also access to journals, dissertations, and books, but I want to focus on the newspapers. Because in the local newspapers, you have several years of the Deseret News and several years of the Salt Lake Tribune. So great place if you need to pull up even obituaries and things like that you can find through here. This also is web-based. I'm going to go ahead and turn this over to Nanette. She's going to walk you through our two most popular
ones. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about our digital services that check out more like a physical collection. These services are more database-oriented. First, we're going to talk about our second most popular, by far, Hoopla. Hoopla is our service provided by Midwest Tape Company, and it is our access to streaming and downloadable movies, television, and music. As you can see here, it's not a huge percentage of our circulation. We only checked, in 2025, we checked out a little over 35,000 items. But there's a lot of content here. 500,000 music items in this service, 63,000 television items, and 31,000 movie. So it's quite a bit, and it's really a survival service for our patrons. Next slide, please. So Hoopla is accessible through an app, the Hoopla app, or through a web browser, both those ways. Most of our circulation, as you can see here, is streaming video, movies, and television, and just under 20% is our music. Patrons are allowed 5 checkouts per month on Hoopla,
And we generally have 11 to 1200 individual unique users every month on Hoopla and about 5,500 annually. The majority, the funny thing about this, their checkout patterns is the majority of people either check out one or five. So they either use a little bit or they use it all the way. Hoopla is a service that we get charged as a cost per cert or a cost per checkout, which means each item that is checked out, the library pays a fee. Now, how much that is can range from 99 cents to $3.99, just depending on the item. But the nice thing about a cost per checkout platform is there's no waiting. The items are always available. Next slide, please. So Hoopla does give us some nice things to help us stretch our dollar. A couple of these things. One is binge passes. Binge passes are a way that a patron can check out one, use one checkout and have access to a larger group of items. So like the Hallmark binge pass. They check out Hallmark. It's checked out for a week. They can watch 1, 2, 3, 5, 10 Hallmark movies for one checkout. So that stretches the checkouts a little bit. And there's binge passes that are really great. Some puzzle ones. There's a comics ones. There's BBC series season, so you can check out a season and binge it in the week. That's why they're called binge passes, so you can watch a lot for one checkout. They also have a thing called bonus borrows, which is at the last 7 days of the month, there's a select small group of materials that can be checked out for free. Free to the library and free to the customer or the patron, not counting toward their checkout. So if they use their five checkouts, they still have that last 7 days where there's a limited amount of things that they can check out still. You can see here, these are our top, I probably can't read it very well, but these are our top 10 titles for 2025. Hallmark, Binge Pass, and the Great Courses Binge Pass are by far our most popular items on the service. But there are a couple music things made the top 10, the K-pop Demon Hunters and the Wicked soundtrack. So there's some music being used. Okay, go ahead and next slide, please. So that's Hoopla. Libby, or Overdrive. Overdrive is the company. We use these a lot interchangeably on our team. Overdrive is the company. Libby is the application. So just so you know kind of the difference there. So Overdrive is our main provider for our digital materials, for our ebooks, e-audiobooks, and now, of course, our digital magazines. In 2025, more than 3.6 million items were checked out from our Overdrive collection, which is almost all of our digital circulation. Go ahead, next slide, please. So with you, as I said, is the application. Most of our patrons access our collection through Libby, which is the app. They do it on a phone. Generally, there's an image there on the left. That's the phone, what it looks like on the phone, a phone or a tablet. Libby is a really great app. It has a lot of features. It's really easy to onboard new users. It has like an integrated holds and checkout shelf. It's easy. People can use multiple library cards and multiple libraries. Through the same interface, which is nice. It allows tags. It's compatible with Apple CarPlay and Android Auto for people who are doing audiobooks in their car. And Overdrive is the only company that offers ebooks that are compatible with Kindle readers, which is a good selling feature for us as well. They also offer direct user support, and that's pretty reliable, and it's really well rated. But that's not the only way people can access our collection. They can access actually through two different websites, the libyapp.com website and then the slco.overdrive.com website. So for people who don't have a mobile device, they still can have access through a computer. The final way that people can access the collection is through Sora. Sora is a student reading app that we have in partnership with some of our school districts, and it allows students to log on using their student ID numbers. And it allows limited access to our collection. The educational facility or organization gets to choose things that they believe are age appropriate, and they have access to our collection through that. Next slide, please. So buying digital, these kinds of digital materials is very, very different from buying books. You buy a book, it checks out, wears out, or doesn't check out, and we get rid of it, right? We don't actually buy materials that are digital. We buy licenses to materials. And the cost and the ability and our ability to lend those materials is very controlled by the publisher. We don't have a lot of control over that. So here's all the different ways we can purchase these digital ebooks and the audiobooks. One copy, one user. That is very much like our buying a book. We own the rights in perpetuity. People have to wait in line. Only one person can have one license at a time, just like a physical book. Then probably the most prevalent right now are metered titles, which means they're metered and we have the license for a certain period, and then we lose the license and have to rebuy it. So things can be metered in different ways, metered by time, generally 12 months or 24 months. And as soon as that time period is gone, we lose it, we have to rebuy the license. Metered by checkouts, generally 26 or 52. As soon as that number of checkouts happens, we have to rebuy the license. And then there's one that's metered by both, one checkouts or time. So 26 checkouts or 12 months. So if we do 26 checkouts in 8 months, we have to rebuy it. If it only checks out in 10 times in 12 months, we have to rebuy it. And all of these people have to wait in line for the license, right? Just like you check out a book, we have to wait in line. So then there's an offer of some items we can get as a cost per circulation model, same as Hoopla. Every time someone checks it out, we pay a certain amount of money. And that amount of money can really range. Like, I've seen 88 cents per circ, and what was $100? That's really unusual, but more like $15 per circ, right? It's very costly, but a nice thing about that is as long as we kind of turn it on and off, if it's turned on and we operate as cost per circ, it doesn't matter. 100 people could have it at one time. There is no waiting while it's turned on. Then there's a newer model that's just kind of becoming more prevalent. It's called metered access concurrent users, MACU, is what we call it. And what that is you generally, the library pays for 100 CERC. And at that point, people can use them, 100 people can have it checked out. As long as we have available CERC in that 100 CERC, you know, 10 people can have it, 20 people, as long as their available CERC is available. People don't have to wait in line as long as we have available CERC. But as once those 100 CERC are gone, we have to rebuy.
Can we pause for just a second? Councilmember Pinky, your hand is still up. Did you have a question, or was that new?
Oh, no question. I'll put it down.
All right, thank you. I just wanted to make sure I looked up and saw it. Okay, keep going.
Okay, so the final way we can purchase miles is through subscription. So magazines is like a subscription, the magazines on Overdrive. But they don't have a limit. They don't count for people's checkout limits. We have classics, a classic subscription. And what happens is you buy that subscription for an amount of time, and all of the items in that subscription are always available during that amount of time. So we can have 2,000 people have Pride and Prejudice because we have a classic subscription. It's always available there as long as our subscription is in effect. All right, next slide, please.
Before you go on, can I ask a question about the publishers decide which options are available per book. So some of them even have more than one way to buy it, but sometimes you just can only do cost per serve because that's the only thing you have from the publisher.
I think last time we talked about this, it didn't matter where it was cost per serve of like, oh, I checked that out, but I actually didn't want to read it. I'm returning it.
Yes.
It still costs.
There's always a cost really to us, even the cost of,
right.
Because we have a limited time, if it's metered, there's always a cost for checkout because someone else doesn't get it, and you can check it out for 3 weeks and they'll use it. But that's just the way the system works, right? Okay, next slide. I'm going to show you a little bit what it looks like, talking about what Joey was saying. This is kind of what we see when we purchase, right? So here's the correspondent. The audiobook, we can buy OCOU, which is where we own the rights in perpetuity, for $76 per copy. But we can also buy it as metered access for 12 months for $38. We can turn on the cost per circ. It's $7.60 per circ if we do that. You can see we have 210 copies, both a mix of the OCOU and the metered access, 2,000 holds, 1,400 circs in the last 12 months. The ebook is only metered, but it can be 12 months or 24 months. Okay, next slide, please. To give you an idea of the cost, particularly of bestseller type books. No cost comparisons. Judge Stone, Viola Davis, and James Patterson. For the library to buy a license for the e-audiobook, $91.99 per copy, metered access for 2 years. So it's expensive. For a patron to go on Amazon and buy it for themselves, $22. For the e-book, $75 per copy, metered access for 2 years. We lose licenses after 2 years. Who knows? So I'm going to go buy the ebook on Amazon. It's $14.99. The physical book for the library costs $78.76, and someone we're going to buy a hardback on Amazon is $14 or $16. So you can see that
digital materials are expensive. Here's your marketing product features, very similar. We just have different platforms, like the audiobook we can only buy OCU. The ebook we can buy 26er for the 100 concurrent users. So very different from the physical book world. Next slide, please. But even though it's very expensive, we still have a really robust collection. We have over 370,000 ebooks, 170,000 audiobooks, and 6,500 magazine titles. And that's all ages, multiple languages. Our circulation, more heavily, a lot heavily weighted to the audiobook side. Just under 60% audiobook, just under 40% ebook, and the magazine is 1.1. Now, this is going to change. We only had magazines last year in 2025 from October, November, December, so this will really change this year. Generally, so on Livy, we allow 15 checkouts at a time, 10 holds at any one time. We have about 60,000 unique patrons every month using the service, and about 110,000 annually use the service. And in this service, most people check out the highest number that people have checked out, 2 to 3. I mean, there are people that are heavy users, but that's most people check out in that 2 to 3 range. Next slide, please. Here are our top for last year. Top ebook was The Women. Our audiobook was The Women. The top ebook was The Leather Fairy. So, any questions about what we've covered? Got it all? It's a great service. It's an expensive service, but just to give you a little, it sounds worse than it was. Those are like the most expensive things that I showed you. There's more of a range in the ebook. You know, you can still get $14.99.
The e-audio, that's the one.
Yeah, the e-audio is more, but the audiobooks, books on CD were obviously always way more expensive than books generally, too. So,
and these don't get scratched.
But oddly, some of them randomly lose their data.
Everything digital. So this is our team, Krista and the four of us. We really enjoy selecting digital books. It's favorite part of my job, honestly.
Mine too.
I'll be honest with you. And we thank you for your time.
How do you go about? You said your favorite part is selecting them. How do you go about selecting them?
It's the same as we do with books. We read reviews. You know, we look at top lists. Don, we look a lot of what's on sale because audiobooks are so expensive, right? They do a lot of sale material. So it's based on review sources and large authors and popularity. And of course, the question has to be smaller because they have to be a little, even though we have big budget, we have to be a little more stuffy.
And I would also add, library users can put a tag on an item that we haven't purchased, and we can look at those items as well. At any given time, when I look at the Notify Me tags on the adult e-audio collection, I have usually in the 100 to 120,000 range for tags. So, and I'll have like my top 20 titles will have at least 100 Notify Me tags on them. I try to work my way down through. But when I'm looking at new items, I use those Notify Me tags a lot to help me identify titles I might miss that aren't on the bestseller list.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of different ways. It's like putting a puzzle and Tetrising it together every month.
So our criteria is the same as we buy physical books where we buy according to our material selection policy. So.
Well, thank you so much. Does anybody else have any questions? Anyone online have any questions? Yeah, such great info. Thanks, Lindsay. I think so too. This was always one of my favorite presentations every year. I always usually feel guilty if I don't. I'm like, listen to it right now. Okay, well, let's move on. The next item on our agenda is the construction update with Joey.
If you don't mind, what if I just, it's pretty short, what if I just add it to the director's report and we skip ahead to the legislative wrap up and it's a little bit less back and forth?
Okay, Matt, you're up.
All right. So, first I want to say that all the legislation we were tracking, the adverse legislation did not pass. So, the legislature said to have a little bit of a reasonable, at least library materials were not on their high level of what they were looking at this second. So, that's good. couple that we did end up seeing happen, the digital skills amendment. So these are things that might impact us adjacently, not directly on. So digital skills allows districts to teach a digital skills course in grade 7 or 8. That's going to take some time to get set up and have the standards and curriculum established. But that is definitely something that is in our wheelhouse, making sure kids are able to have, well, everybody's able to have visual skills to access information, emails, all of the things that we do regularly out of the reference desk on the floor. There was a bill, House Bill 230, offender amendments. It requires the county jail to assist certain county jail inmates in obtaining a current driver's license or state-issued identification. That is also an opportunity for us in, through our life skills process to be able to be a partner for the jail and help that happen. I don't know if it will or not, but it is something that I think is a good opportunity for us. There's the House Bill 450 data privacy amendments, and there was more in this one, but a lot of it was kind of administrative. They're moving the function to the Office of Data Privacy and out of the State Auditor's Office. While the auditor will still be able to audit data that we have, it will actually be under a single data privacy entity, I think. There's a few other things there. A privacy ombudsman it establishes a data privacy complaint process. It removes duplications from the government or from the Grandma Government Records and Management Act. And so it's not like we have to look in both places. The data privacy is subservient to the Grandma anyway, so we would be definitely following Grandma. And because of Grandma, all of our paper data is private. So it is not something that we would ever make available to the public, reading histories, any of that kind of stuff. We also have to do a training annually or within 30 days of new hires. So this will be something that we'll continue to work with the county and the state and providing, I don't know, Emily, so you're probably involved with that.
Yeah, and county employees are all doing the training under SABA instead of trying to figure out who's touching, you know, data, who's been recently hired. It's just put in their jobs. They all do it.
It's our training platform,
Strava. Yeah. So it's something that happens pretty automatically. And Emily's not here, but we have a pretty high number of people, percentage of people complete our training this year. Just so you know, Good Friday is now a legal holiday in Utah. The state will provide a half day of time off. I haven't heard anything from the county yet, but we'll keep our eyes and ears open. And then Senate Bill 241, Early Literacy, establishes the third grade level of reading goal of 80%. So we want 80% of third grade students to be on reading on the right reading level by 2030. And so something that definitely is in our wheelhouse. Early learning is one of our ongoing high priorities, and we'll continue to make it so. Any questions? Okay, awesome. Thanks.
Thank you. I hope you're resting now that the session's over.
You know, it was so nice. There was one bill that I wanted to pass, which would allow schools, or which would mandate that schools put a certified teacher librarian in the schools, but that didn't, but hopefully it'll come back next year.
Yeah. Well, thank you. That's so much work. I know tracking all those bills is a lot. It's a heavy lift. So take care of yourself. Well, let's move on to our director's report. Katie or Zoe?
Okay.
Gender neutral dating. So quickly, I will say February 23rd, 4th, February 24th, since our board meeting was on the 23rd, we were approved by the county council for some budget adjustments and something called a parameters resolution for our bonding and borrowing for our new construction. Thank you so much to our board members who were able to join that council presentation. I think our council members hear from staff, you know,
intermittently and regularly. But when we're able to show community support for something like this, particularly because we're not talking about small dollar amounts, to help our policymakers see the community support that we have for the city is really powerful. So thank you for coming, and thanks to our council members for their support of these projects. Gosh, it's been a long process to be ready to get ready to present these ideas to council and then to be able to share that information with them. So we're thrilled that we have this sort of process, important sort of green light or intersection. And our RFP for our West Valley rebuild in partnership with Valley West is open, or was until very recently. So we've had a lot of interest from architects locally and nationally for that. We're planning on opening an RFP later this spring for our Midvale build. So I expect to get a lot of interest for that as well. It's a big building. Architects maybe like building libraries, that's great news for us. And things are moving along with our operations center. So we had budget adjustment for that project. And so that was kind of on hold for a couple of months, but we were waiting to see if we were going to get budget adjustment because we had to wait. Like, stuff had to wait until we knew some information about this. So that's picking back up again, and it is going to be wonderful. And we'll make sure to bring you in when it's done. We're still a ways out, but happy to be moving forward on that again. So thanks to our teams who are participating on our selection committees and who are participating in our design teams. This also takes, it's multiple hours a week to be participating on these design projects. And it's exciting and also kind of tedious. And I'm really grateful for our staff who are sort of leaning into these projects. The other thing I just wanted to mention quickly is that our Daybreak branch hosted a groundbreaking for Arts and Culture's new Larry H. and Gail Miller Family Arts Center in Daybreak. So just down the block, our Arts and Culture division of the county is going to be building a new art center. So we're really excited about having that amenity in the neighborhood. I think it's going to be a really great addition to services for the community. And we hosted the event on the roof of our Daybreak branch. And No weddings were happening. And Gail Miller mentioned that it was her first time attending a groundbreaking on the roof of a building before, which I thought was pretty funny. And it was great, and it was really fun. And our Daybreak team did a phenomenal job of preparing the space and just being really welcoming hosts for our partners. And certainly our facilities team had gone out and did a lot of work as well in advance of that to make sure that, like, the mulch wasn't blown away by the wind, and among other things. So thanks to our team for just helping to create a really nice event for our sister agency as we welcome our new neighbors to the Daybreak area. So it's great. Yeah.
Just a brief comment. I'm in the West Valley City area, and had a lot of conversations with people in my neighborhood about the library. Everything has been positive. They are so excited that the idea of having that, the partnership and things like that, just been very, very positive around that community. So,
thank you for saying that. That it feels really good to us. And so having that bear out with the community who we're here to serve is really great. I think people like seeing wise use of our resources, and our council members have some legislative intent to help encourage agencies to be focusing on mixed-use facilities, or if there's opportunities for revenue generation or the campus model, to help make sure that we're giving the best options for residents. So we're so glad that that the community's enjoying, looking forward to that.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Joey. Let's move on to the public services section of the agenda.
Okay. I just want to offer, if you think they have time, I can always do this to a future event or future time, or do it either way.
Sorry, real quick. Jessica asked a question, I think, for Matt on the initiatives. How does the library help or offer support on these initiatives? Which one? Like the share?
Oh, and Is there a specific one, Jessica, that you're asking about?
I just think, with some of those, like, third grade reading levels and, you know, clearly areas where you have expertise, like, what does that collaboration look like? Or, you know, do they reach out to the library and say, hey, how do we implement? Or does the library offer support? I was just curious.
Great question, and we look forward to talking to the school districts. Unfortunately, we are already connected with them. We have a senior librarian who's our liaison with all of the school districts that we serve. But we also already do a lot of early learning programming. In fact, we have our big play on Saturday. So that was a way for kids and parents and families to come in and just play, be kids, and also they're adjacent to early learning programs. Our job is to help parents get their five-year-olds ready to go to kindergarten, but also then to support parents in the first and second grades as well. So that's why we have our juvenile readers collection. We have very early readers. We have a lot of different resources that people can use. Krista and I will work together on some of the early learning stuff. And so hopefully the schools will see the value of the libraries and include us a little bit more, but we'll be having that conversation with them as well.
I would add to that, early learning is a space that the library has had a lot of emphasis, I guess, for a long time. And so this is, this sounds like a humble brag, I guess. I don't know how to say it any other way, but this is not new for us. We think early literacy is really critical and have for a long time. What we see is a really great opportunity for this sort of larger cultural, like, you know, so conversation to be happening, to be able to use that to promote some of the resources that we have available to make it easier for families to help their kids be ready for kindergarten and certainly grow as readers in those early grades as needed. So we want to sort of tie into that with what we're doing and potentially target our services a little bit more specifically based on where we're seeing the needs to be.
It's in your favorite early learning phrase. About third grade.
Oh, third grade is a critical. That's my favorite. Third grade is a critical mark. You guys might already know this. Oh, I'm like so nervous.
Oh, sorry.
When you in elementary school, up to third grade, you are learning to read. After that, you're reading to learn. That's why it's this critical sort of milestone. Did I get it? Critical milestone for young learners. And so we think we've just got a ton of resources that can help families in that preparation as folks become more aware of how important that is and how to do it. I was actually thinking about saying this. I cut it short. Yes, Jen, let's do you next month. Kind of short, yes. Very Jim of me, I think. We want to let the parents know and people who are working with kids know how easy it actually is. Like, I think that a lot of parents, particularly of young kids, feel like there's, like, a lot of ways to do it wrong. Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh, don't introduce foods at this particular exact age so that they don't get food allergies and do this at this time and do this at this time and make sure you're reading and playing and not overly directing or whatever, like, all these rules are about how to be a parent. And one of the things that we're really trying to message, I was just seeing a great social media post today about it, is, like, sitting with your kid and letting them hold a book while the page, while the thing's upside down and they're turning the pages is totally part of it. That counts as helping kids learn how to read because that's where they are developmentally, is just understanding how to even interact with a book. And so one of the things that we really want to do is make it accessible for folks, how simple it really is, spend a few minutes with your kids and a book in your hand and, like, let the conversation and the interaction with the book sort of take its course, and your kids will naturally advance. They'll be able to manage that. So that's how. In answer to your question, how does the library offer support on these initiatives? And certainly partnerships is something that we're exploring, too, not just with the schools, but with other entities that I think could help raise awareness and make our resources accessible. Thank you. Is there anything? I'm sorry to have said that.
No, that's okay.
You make your decision, but we do have both.
Yeah, and I know that we still have Sarah as well. Jen, was there anything like that cost that you wanted to talk about?
Okay.
Are you comfortable waiting until?
Absolutely.
Okay, let's wait then.
Yeah.
Sarah, what about you? I don't want either of you to feel rushed, right?
Like, can I speak more?
Please, yes.
I just want to mention this really quick because it is timely, because Anne asked me about it a month or two ago. Just talking about America 250 and what the county library is doing and the county and state celebrate. So the library is starting our programming for America 250 in April. So we're planning to have most of our programming in April and May, but of course it will carry over into summer because that is when all of the celebrations are happening. We have multiple branches doing programs and that can vary from flying activities to like a Hamilton tea party, things like that. So there's a lot of great stuff happening. We're also focusing on our create spaces that have audio visuals so that people can tell their stories and our kids' or family history stories in conjunction with that. And we will have our bookmark contest coming back again this year, part of America 250. And then at the county level, the county is doing a large-scale canned food art installation project. So it will be, I think, at 8 different locations throughout the county. So it will be installations and then also food drives to benefit the county residents and the food banks here. And so we will be... One location is our West Jordan branch inside the library, and then the Meridian will be the kickoff event on our June 5th First Friday concert. So we'll be kicking it off then. We're also working with the Utah State Library. They are developing an activity booklet that is very 50-50 themed, and so we will have that available in our branches later on this summer. And then there's also this big, the Pen is Mightier exhibit happening at the State Capitol that's here all year. There's a smaller version of the display and information that we have at that's going to move from 3 of our county library branches. So right now it's at Holiday. It's going to move to Mill Creek and then to River. So we have a lot of fun events happening throughout the system for America.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Before we wrap up, any other thoughts, questions, closing remarks? Okay. With that, that is the end of our board meeting today. We'll see you all back here in April. I'm going to motion to adjourn.
Hi.
Thank you. We're just waiting for somebody to say names aloud.